Wednesday version. In this episode, you're going to hear Matt have a conversation with Mark, who's 2 years into his widowhood journey, his amazing love story with his wife, and where he and his daughter are today, 2 years out. We hope you find this show informative, useful, and insightful. And here's the conversation. Hey, this is my buddy, Mark Rowe. Mark, thank you for taking time out of your day to record this episode of the Solo Dad Podcast, Widow's Version. Welcome, man. How are you doing today?
Appreciate it. I'm doing great, man. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate you giving this opportunity just to talk and share my story.
Yeah, you and I connected through one of the Widow Facebook groups, and we kind of have a really good vibe. You're doing an amazing job of sharing some like really cool inspirational quotes and stuff, and we can bring that up on, you know, how you've been doing that and helping other folks. For the people that are jumping in and listening, tell them kind of where you're at in your grief journey now, and then we can talk more about your story and unfortunately how you and I became connected in widowhoodness.
Oh yeah, not a problem. Right now, I just went 2 years past my wife's anniversary on January 16th. It's me and my daughter. We currently just moved to Texas about 5 months ago. So it's a new, that alone is just big by itself, you know? So yeah, so, you know, where do you want me to start again? And you know, I got all these thoughts in my head. So
yeah. How old's your daughter now? She's what?
She's
13. So she was 11. How is the newness of the move working? I did a similar thing. I mean, I jumped only across border, and I know you and I were both in Illinois, but how has that been a good thing for you guys? And has there been anything like, because I think a lot of widows think, you know, I'm going to stay in this house forever. And sometimes it may make, whether it's financial sense or emotional sense, and you took a heck of a jump, but like sometimes a fresh start is better. Sometimes leaving that memory in the past in that home is a good thing. How's that been good for you? And then any challenges, and then we can talk about.
Yeah, definitely. Moving has actually been a great blessing for me and my daughter. She's doing great. You know, in the beginning we thought, you know, like anybody, you got to worry about the kids, you know, their well-being, changing their surrounding, how they're going to function, and, you know, meeting new friends. And just this past month in January, she was actually a student of the whole district. So that just shows me that she's doing very well. She's making friends. She's meeting a lot of people. Also got her some help through the school. So that's definitely a plus, you know. So she's seen a counselor twice a month. They kind of know our story, you know, they know a little bit of the story, and we'll get to talk about more about that with her, you know, whatever she tells the counselor. As far as moving, I did definitely need a fresh start, man. I was with my wife 12 years. And being at home, it was definitely hard because, like most men, probably, my wife did all the decorating. So her fingerprint was on everything. Like, it doesn't matter, you know, down to the sponge that cleans the dishes, you know what I mean? So everywhere I went, everywhere I walked, every picture was her. And as much as I loved it, as much as, you know, I miss it, and I, you know, my kids and all that, It was tough being in that. It was almost like a jail cell in a sense too, you know, because you're happy, but then you're also sad and depressed, you know, and then, you know, you go to your room, you go lay in the bed that you laid with her, and she's not there, you know, her pillow's empty. So I just needed some big change. And of course, a lot of people, family, some friends, they're like, you know, shouldn't do it. You know, it's too big of a move. You're not going to have support. You're not going to have everything you need here. All your family's here. But it's been great. Me and my daughter, we've been going out, having a blast, doing new things, experiencing new things.
And dancing at Targets and Walmarts. I've seen those. Yeah. Those are fantastic. I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what we do, I don't know. We listen to music a lot. She has her headphones on. I have mine on. We're walking. And then I just start dancing, and she just gives me this look. So, you know, now she's used to it. In the beginning, right. She used to like shake her head, like, oh my God, you know, but, and I always joke with her. I was like, oh, I forgot. You can't hear my music. Right. And then and then the thing is, because I have the headphones on, I'm speaking louder than normal.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So you're like yelling at her while you're walking to Target. Well, it sounds like, I think the two of the things that three that I wrote down real quickly, I think they're bear worth repeating, is that one, you moved, you know, to a place that I think you, if I remember wrong, you have some family there, right? Not as big as
Illinois. Well, I have family, but it's on my dad's side, and I don't really know them.
Know them
I
that really well. Don't know my dad. And then the other thing that I think that is important is, you know, A, you said you took the kids, you know, you took the kid or kids into consideration, but she's also reflecting back that she's thriving. And the other thing that you kind of inadvertently mentioned, but like is really important. I think guys, sometimes we miss this step, is you've set up some support structures for her and you. So she's got counseling, right? Twice a month. And that's huge. Whether it's just to say, hey, we moved to Texas and I don't like Tex-Mex and my dad's an idiot when he dances. That's great, because guess who's not there for her to have that conversation with anymore? Her mom, right? And so giving her that avenue, whether it's for grief or something else for right now for this transition, was really smart. So I think that a lot of people, whether it's through school or private or whatever, grief is something that we need as much help as we can managing it, especially early on, because it's so individual, right? Like some people get really mad, some people get really sad, some people get super active, some people get super depressed. And we can't, as the solo parent, manage all of it, especially if you have your own grief, you're dealing with their grief. So kudos on you for getting her the support and stuff. So you see, wife, 12 years. I know about the decoration thing. Like I quite literally walk through my house and I go, you know, my wife and I weren't together that long, but it's like everything I have in here has her fingerprint on it. And it took a while. And you know, I think when we talked originally too about your move, is there's this weird transition you go through that I'm still doing, which is our life, my wife and I's life, is now my life. And so I can make decisions based on what's best for just me and my kids.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because for so long, whether it was 1 year or 12 years or whatever, we're considering a partner in our decisions, right? And that's a good thing. It's a healthy thing to do in a relationship.
Yes.
But when that goes away, it's this really weird feeling of like, oh, if I want to, I can hang up my Scarface poster again from college. I wouldn't, but right? Like, because my wife's not going to yell at me, right? So it's interesting. Right. Yeah. You see, right. Exactly. And so it's interesting that when you have that fresh start, because, and I think you and I are going to talk more about this in a minute too, there's a new version of you coming out, right? There's, and I think it's a good segue of talking about how you met your wife and your wife's journey. There's you when you met your wife, you with your wife. And now there's this new you that was never any part of being with your wife because she's passed. And this is a new version of yourself that we're getting to know, right? Like it happens in an instant. We become widowed and you're like, oh, I'm now a widowed guy with a kid. This wasn't something I grew into. It just happened to me. And so I think this is a really good spot for you to talk about, because I really think it's an amazing story. Talk about how you met your wife and that whole journey. And because there's quite literally a part of you that was with her and et cetera. So please share that with us and all that led up to that.
Yeah, I'll try to keep it simple as possible, because I could definitely go on and on and on. I'm sure like you can, talking about my wife. You know, she was an amazing person, but I was very lucky and blessed. So the way it started originally is I was actually going through a divorce, you know, didn't really go out much. So I had a friend that I met, and he wasn't even my friend originally. It was through an acquaintance. Her friend went on a double date. She's like, hey, I met some guy, you know, she wants to know if we could go on a date with her because she doesn't feel comfortable. I'm like, okay, cool, let's go on this date. But I just want you to know it's just friends. I end up going, they went to the bathroom, me and the guy ended up talking, right? And we became friends. They stopped talking, we stopped talking to the girls, but we became friends, really good friends. And then he's like, hey, Mark, we're gonna go to this bar, you wanna come out? I'm like, yeah, sure, let's go. And then he was like, well, we got to go pick up this girl, though. And he's giving me the directions, how to go, where at, this and that. In the end, she ended up living four blocks away from me. I'm like, dude, why don't you just tell me where she lives? You know, I live right there. And just that alone, it was just like, okay, cool. No big deal, right? I'm still not even trying to date. I'm just whatever, hanging out with the guys. But she got in my car. And as soon as I saw her, I knew, man. You know, I could remember everything she's wearing. She was wearing like a black shirt, some gray shorts with some boots, and just everything about her eyes. She got in the back seat, and something about her, I knew. I was like, man, I'm gonna marry this girl. You know, she didn't know it, but I knew it. I joke with my daughter, it's like, yeah, as soon as I knew it, I was gonna lock mommy down.
And, I love it.
Yeah, so from there, we went out to the bar, and what happened is I had to go to work the next day on a Saturday morning, overtime, you know. And she left her purse in the car. And so I left, went to work. So she had to call me or text me to get her purse. And that's how I got her number. So I went and dropped off the purse.
Did you ever ask her if she purposely left her purse?
We joked about it. She says no.
Subconsciously, yeah, right? It's the old leave behind, right? You're like, oh, I didn't mean to leave my wallet at your house. You're like, right, yeah, sure you didn't. Anyway, keep going.
Yeah, we always joke about that, man. And you know what the crazy thing is? It was a little red purse, right? Or green purse. And I have it here still in my house. I have it with me. And so I posted about it. I talked about it. And but I still have it here. You know what I mean? That's
There's something about our ladies, our ladies, that sounds funny. Our wives like purses and handbags. So I have a couple that, you know, my wife had some classic ones she used all the time. And I'm sure my daughter's not going to necessarily love to use it or whatever, but like I've saved it because there's so many memories of like, that's the one that we had, you know, at the Cubs game. That's the one that we had. We went to this thing. It was like a carry-all purse, right? And then it's like, or like the little clutch. You're like, oh, that's the one we went to that really fancy, whatever, wedding or dinner. And she had this pretty clutch. It's interesting that post-passing, it replays in your head. But yeah. Like, I could have, if she was alive today and she goes, what purse did I have when we went to the Cubs game? I'm like, I don't know, a black one, but I can tell you now which one it is, right? It's interesting. That's sweet.
I joke with my daughter and I tell her, I'm like, because of that purse is why you're born. You know? Because you know, if it wasn't for that purse, none of this would have happened.
She's like, I don't know how I feel about that purse.
She says that, yeah, she says it's things like that. But so from that moment, you know, I went and dropped off the purse, we met, but nothing happened. I remember, you know, she had I was meeting some friends, some guys liked her, of course, because she was beautiful, and they used to tell me everywhere they were going. So for me, it's like, oh, I'm showing up, you know, and from there, I just showed up. We didn't even talk, you know, for the first week. I just showed up, just made myself present, just want to be around her, you know. But one day I was having a doctor's appointment and just a regular checkup. And I just texted her, hey, I'm just trying to meet some new people, going through a divorce. We want to hang out. We went out to the movies, hung out, you know, didn't try nothing, anything, just hung out. And then the next day it's like, hey, my cousin's having a get together, cookout. You want to hang out? It's like, sure. So from there, we started hanging out for 2 straight weeks, like constantly, every day. But I still didn't try nothing, didn't make a move, just friends. And then one morning, you know, I went to go visit my brother at the cemetery. And I'm like, okay, cool. You know, I'm visiting him, talking to him. You know, that's who I would talk to when I, you know, just talk. You know how it is. And so I called her and it's like, hey, what are you doing? You want to go have some breakfast? And she's like, oh, sure, you know, but I'm busy right now. I'm visiting a friend. I'm like, oh, cool. Well, I'm visiting my brother at the cemetery. When you're done, just let me know. I'll go pick you up. She goes, well, I'm at the cemetery. I'm like, what do you mean you're at the cemetery? She goes, yeah, I go where at. And then she tells me where she's at. And we're actually at the same cemetery, but just on opposite ends where we can't see each other.
That's crazy. That's amazing.
So from there, we talk and everything, and then we're meeting to the middle of the cemetery, like literally the center of the cemetery. You know, we could see each other. Sun's coming up. She's walking. The sunlight's all on her. It's like something out of a movie, you know what I mean? Seriously. And then we meet in the center, and then we hang up, of course, and we're talking. And she held my hand. And from that moment, we never left each other's side until I buried her in that same cemetery.
Man, that is, I remember when you first told me that. It's super powerful. Did you guys go back? This is going to sound weird, but did you guys go back to that cemetery as like a remembrance of like first knowing that? Cause my wife and I had a dinner where we had our first dinner. It was kind of became our celebratory place. Right. And unfortunately COVID and stuff, it's closed now in Chicago, but like I would still go there on our anniversary, like after she passed away. Like, did you use the cemetery as that? My family has a weird relationship with cemeteries too. Like, so it's not weird if it is, but did you guys, like you have a picnic in the cemetery, be like, oh, remember the time we first kind of.
Unfortunately, we went to the cemetery a lot, but not for that reason.
Okay.
We lost a daughter.
Right.
You know, that was only 8 weeks old and, you know, 3 months preemie. So we were at the cemetery quite a bit, unfortunately, but not for
and the reason. Same, but like in that. The same, so that's, is your
in
daughter
the same
there?
Cemetery. Yeah, wow. In the same cemetery. So who would have thought all that, that literally now she's buried right next to my brother.
Wow. That's powerful, man.
So of course, whenever I go to the cemetery, I go visit my family. Now, personally, by myself, I do sit down and eat there. I've even watched a movie there.
Sure. You know? Absolutely. It's fun. We have a bunch of family in Northern California, and there's a story where my mom, we had like whatever sub sandwiches. And there's so many like offshoots of our family that my mom was having us look for headstones. So I'm like, I don't know, 14, my younger brother's like 8, and we're just wandering through a cemetery on a Saturday afternoon looking for, you know, Pfizer or whatever the last name is, yeah. Smith or Jones. And I'm like, I look back, I'm like, that was a weird Saturday. My mom's like, I wanted to find family. And I'm like, oh yeah. Man, it's you a know, little, but there's nothing wrong with communicating exactly. with them. Absolutely yeah. not.
Unfortunately, in that same area, I have 13 family members that are there.
Wow.
Yeah. I also have my dad. He's across the street and my sister as well. So, man. And then I got, you know, my grandfather, uncles, aunts, you know, they're all right there. You know, I had a cousin that sung at my daughter's funeral, right? You know, she sung there. We have it recorded. And 2 months later, she was only 15. She committed suicide and she's buried between my brother and my wife.
Wow. You know, oh my goodness, bud. Jeez.
Yeah. So it's kind of weird how all that full circle, like, man, you know, my brother's here. My daughter passed. She sung at my daughter's funeral. Now she's buried next to my brother. And now my wife passed and my wife's buried next to her. And it's like,
so that's interesting. Like you said, not to make it trivial, but like the circle of life of like the starting and the ending of the fact that you met your wife at that cemetery. You really, I'd say, coupled up, right? At that point,
yeah.
You really
yeah, that's when we were official.
Yeah, I really felt there was something special there. And then all the family that you have and all the history that goes to that central point, it's both got to be a place of really a lot of sadness. I mean, we know this with grief, but also a place of really like a lot of powerful like reverence and like powerful memories and stuff when you go visit there and pay. Respect. And I say, you know, like respect is fine too, but like, I believe we can commune with people, whether they are buried or whether they're interned or whatever, like you can sit and remember them and be in their presence again. And I think that's part of, I think, a healthy thing to do, in some form or fashion, you know, from time to time, because it takes you back to what was, and then it probably puts some reflection on what is. So,
definitely.
Yeah. So, okay. So,
yeah. Real quick, sorry.
No.
I think that's how some people say, like, Mark, you're so positive or this or that. But then I look about, you know, like I said, going to the cemetery, looking at family that's not around and what they've gone through, man. And the one thing me and my wife always said when we lost our daughter, no matter what happened to us, because she was only 1 pound, 2 ounces, 3 months preemie. She was put on dialysis at 7 weeks, didn't work. And we said, if she could go through all that, who are we to complain about anything? You know, so from that moment on, me and my wife promised never to like complain. And then my wife being sick, she said, never use me as an excuse. So that's kind of like the two main things of, you know, that keeps me going forward. If that makes sense.
No, absolutely. Well, and part of it is that, like, right, it's a bigger thing about perspective too, right? Where you go like, well, if your baby daughter could go through all that, is really, you know, slow internet, the house really worth pissing and moaning about, right? Like sometimes we all have to have some reality check sometimes where it's like, you know, oh, they forgot to put cheese on my cheeseburger. At the end of the day, is that really worth burning all those angry calories? And I'm not saying that we all don't have our moments. I've had mine. I'm sure you have yours, but so that's a powerful perspective. So you did mention, and so when you met your wife and she was already diagnosed with. So go ahead and tell me about her health history.
Yeah. Because
I think there's another really powerful part of this story that I want to share.
Definitely. When I met my wife, I really didn't realize how sick she was. You know what I mean? You know, she was diabetic. You know, I have family members that are diabetic and everything, but you don't really think about it because it's them, not you. You know what I mean? Be honest. You don't know what's going on in their daily life. But when I met her, especially in the beginning, it was like very, very eye-opening. I remember, you know, of course, she would stay the night. We were dating and stuff, and times where I had to call off work because she was having a diabetic attack in the morning. She had like the twilight, you know, and no matter what she did, ate, whatever, we check it, didn't matter sometimes. And then it's like, I didn't know what to do in the beginning. You know, I had to reach out to her. Yeah, I had to learn, talk to her mom, talk to her. What do I need to do? The paramedics. And from there, you know, we did okay, but like I said, I knew This is going to sound funny. It wasn't intentional, but it was, I think it was both our parts. You know, we had our daughter very early. We were only together 2 months and she got pregnant. And even with that was something because I knew she was pregnant. And it's funny because she went to all the hospitals. She even did the blood work test, everything. And they all came back negative. No, you're not pregnant. You're not pregnant. But I knew she was. It's like, no, I know you're pregnant. I don't care what the doctors say. You're pregnant. She ended up going back later and she was pregnant. But like you said, going back to her health, I really didn't realize how bad it was. But I remember one morning she got up and she was driving. She was driving my car and she was going home. She had a diabetic attack. And this is how we really found out she was pregnant. She lost conscience and she was driving and she almost went into a river.
Oh God.
Yeah. Luckily she hit like a medium that stopped it, like a plant, big old plant. And it stopped it going into the river. And that's when they took her and found out she was pregnant because the reason her energy and everything dropped so fast because they found out she was eating for two.
Oh, wow. You know what I mean?
And
real quick, just so that she'd been diabetic, like juvenile diabetes.
Yeah, right?
since
8 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. So wow. Yeah, she told me that when she found out is the Super Bowl that Michael Jackson sung at. That's when she found out.
Oh, wow. That's a crazy tie in memory. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, because she was in the hospital and she said, I remember watching the Super Bowl in the hospital with my parents and Michael Jackson was the halftime show.
And he told me I had diabetes. That's how I knew. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, and so I think the other thing that's worth people understanding is like when it's that long run of a diabetic, in a female and for that long, like just being pregnant can be super dicey, right? I mean, just being pregnant is something that is worth weighing out. And so the fact that she was able to get pregnant and that event baby J, right, is you know, was able to come into the world is pretty powerful. So so keep going. So find out that she's actually pregnant, even though it was, yeah.
So she was scared and worried, of course, because prior before me, she was engaged prior before me. I guess the relationship wasn't healthy on her part, the guy, and she never went past 2 months, you know what I mean? So when she met me, she was scared, she was nervous, she was happy. And then as soon as we hit that 3 mark area, I remember she was worried, you know, and everything was good. And then we went to 6 months and then we went to 7 months and baby J was actually born 2 months early. She was 2 pounds, 10 ounces. Yeah. Yeah. So she was born early, but everything ended up being good and fine. And she's healthy and living a great life. So that was her mom. Like, man, I'm so happy. You know, I finally am a mother. And then with our second daughter, they say, look, there's two things. One, either kind of hurry up, you know, have another kid or something, you know, or you wait, build up your strength, but who knows what's going to happen because you're sick and you're getting older, you know? So we kind of went back to back, you know, we went for another child, which we had, but she was 3 months preemie, 1 pound, 2 ounces, like I told you guys in the beginning. And, you know, she unfortunately her kidneys didn't fully develop. So imagine her mom's having kidney failure and then issues with that. And then our daughter, her kidneys didn't fully develop, you know? So for me, it's kind of like a big thing with that. You know what I mean? It hits hard. So she ends up only living 8 weeks and she passes away. And after that, that really took a toll on my wife's body. Like it just destroyed her body right then. And she actually started having the kidney failure. And then this is what happened. Our daughter passes, right? 2 months later, my cousin that I said sung at our funeral, she commits suicide. 2 months after that, my dad passes away. All right. And then that Christmas, we get a call saying her kidneys are failed and she needs to go on dialysis or have a kidney transplant.
What year was this approximately? Ballpark it.
About 2010.
Wow. Okay.
So imagine, you know, daughter dies, cousin dies. Dad dies. This is all from April to December.
Wow.
And then, you know, how do you have a Christmas? It's like literally 2 days before Christmas.
Right. We yeah. And oh, by the way, you have baby Jay, who is how old at this point?
She's only at that point, not even a year. Cause her and her sister are the same age for like 2 months.
Wow.
You know, oh my gosh. So she's a baby. And then on top of that, which a lot of people don't know, you know, of course, you know, we talked about it, but I also have five other kids on top of this.
Right. Right.
That are, right. So just that real quick, you know, I got divorced, but me and my wife got custody of all the boys. You know what I mean? So she was mom. You know what I mean? She raised them for the 12 years from when they were like 12. And then my youngest was 4 at the time. And she raised them all to adulthood. You know what I mean? So you got all these boys, you know, losing a daughter, losing a, you know, all that stuff. And then they say, you know what? Your kidneys are shutting down. You either got to get a transplant or go on dialysis. And I remember how hard that was for her, especially, but,
because that's a real thing, right? Like you can say I'm diabetic and that's a thing you manage, but kidney shutting down isn't something you can just manage through what you eat and some insulin and et cetera. That's a real thing, right?
Yeah, that's life changing. Because what happened is the following year, you know, I went to the doctors, let's go get tested, let's do all this. I'm going to give my wife my kidney. Like, sir, that's not how it works. You got to get tested. You got to do all this. You know, like, you got the chances of you giving her a kidney, I don't even know. And so I'm like, sir, I really don't care what you say. I'm giving my wife my kidney. That's literally my mindset. And this is how I know. And I'm not religious, right? I'm not religious, but I do believe in God and I do believe in relationship with God. You know, we talked about this a little bit. I believe there's a higher power and stuff, and he does things. And I remember we went and got tested and the test came back and they said, guess what? You're a perfect match, 100%. You could give your kidney to your wife.
Wow.
Like, what are the odds? You know, like.
Well, someone can tell us. I can tell you that. We can look it up if we want. It's not high. I can tell you that, Mark.
Yeah.
It's low. That's amazing. Yeah.
So just to be a match, but to be a perfect match, 100%, they said.
Wow.
So I was like, okay, let's do this. And then from there, I gave my wife my kidney. And then from there, she ended up a couple months later getting a pancreas transplant as well. So for 2 years, she wasn't diabetic or anything. She had to take meds, checkups. But for 2 years, we had a really good 2 years of her not being sick or in the hospitals or anything like that. And unfortunately, it's weird how medicine and stuff works because they're meant to help you, but they couldn't find the balance between the kidney medicine and the pancreas medicine. So they killed each other. You know what I mean? And they end up failing. And so over the course of the years, you know, and then we'll talk a little bit more detail how it affects us and everything. But over a course of 8-year period, she ended up having 5 transplants, 2 kidneys, 2 pancreas, and it's called like an islet cell transplant. It's experimental. And over 8-year period, and they failed.
Wow. Oh, so, God, your wife was strong. Jesus.
Yeah. So imagine, like, you already have the everyday life, right? Just being alive.
Right.
Then you got family. the husband and wife dynamic. Then you throw in the kids dynamic. Then I have an ex-wife. You know, she was cool, but you still got that.
Yeah, it's still something. It's a thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you still got regular, everyday.
Yeah, the minutia of just, like, getting groceries, right?
Yeah.
Man. So, you know. Let's take just a second, because I think this might be helpful for some folks. Talk about, like, in that, let's skip the good years. I know that sounds bad because we'll come back to those. What did you lean on? Like, what did you find? Like, and you can, I would say that you have faith, right? I think that's probably you're spiritual and you have faith, which I think is fine. What did you lean on in those, like, when she's going through those transplants? And, you know, what type of, like, as a guy, as a father, like, what did you find yourself doing to A, keep your sanity, but also, like, to still, you know, be a dad and be a husband? And you've got kids ranging probably at that time, what, between the ages of 14 and like 2-year-old?
Yeah.
So, like,
yeah, something
like that, So, like, what can you share? Because I think a lot of times guys coming into grief, we just were caregivers, right? So, my wife's cancer journey was just inside of a year. But it's taxing. And I think that a lot of guys don't understand, like, we put things in place to help us. And I'm just curious, what did you find during those really tough times? Like, what did you lean on personally? Because I think it'll probably come out that you're still using some of those today. I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I'm gonna be like very transparent. It's not gonna be like some like secret sauce, some, you know, but
no, yeah.
You know what I mean? But this is the thing. Me and my wife, you know, one was always being open and transparent with each other, right? Just talking, you know, about what we're going through. Of course, my faith, you know what I mean? Because that's something that she got me back into, saying, you know what, just trust God, everything's gonna be okay, you know. And she got us back into, got me back into that, but the whole family. But some of the main little things that are little but so big, because I look back on it, especially now you're talking about it, there's two things that really stick out that really helped me, where my wife didn't give me like hassle or an issue with it, because she knew that it helped me. If that, you know, does that make sense? One was, is gonna laugh, especially for guys or girls, they're gonna say, what? Was Madden.
Oh, sure. Video games. Absolutely. Yeah.
I got boys. So guess what we did? Play Madden, Halo.
My wife would let me, when she'd come home from treatments, and I still, there's some guilt for this. So I'd get the baby set. I'd get her mm-hmm. set. She'd be all comfortable. She'd be kind of drifting in and out between whatever pain meds and whatever she was on. I'd get her all comfortable. We'd be like kind of cuddled on the couch. And eventually she'd be like, just, and we, she'd call it, go kill bad guys, right? Because I'd play like, and I'm terrible, man. I'm terrible. But I'd be, and so the joke became like, well, the bad guys aren't going to kill themselves on PUBG. Like, I got to go down and handle some business. I don't handle any business. I'm horrible. But it would be a relief. And it worked. When I say, and you probably did the same thing, it would usually be fairly late at night, right? Like, yeah. it would be like the day was kind of done and I'm burning into the after hours. And I do have some regrets of like, I should have stayed on the couch longer. I should have, whatever. Exactly. But I forget that it was with my wife's blessing, right? And when I replay it, I feel like I'm being selfish, but she'd be like, you've done enough for the day. Everything's fine. Go take 30 minutes, an hour, whatever you need. So no shame in that. So your jam was Madden, and I'm terrible at Madden too.
Yeah,
right? Unless it's against the computer. I'm so bad, but keep going. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so she used to say, you know, go spend time with the boys. And she used to love watching too. And because she used to like, go destroy them. You're good. She used to want me to go play for money and stuff. And I'm like, nah, I'm not, you know, I don't want to do all that. But she was like, you know what? And then there's other games I would play that she would just love to watch me play. She goes, you know what? I just love watching you play.
So well, that's just showing that your partner knew what filled you back up to give you energy to take on the next day or the battle or the struggle that was going to come down the road, right? Because, and we talk about this in other podcasts where like we run on empty, and I'm not just, this isn't guys, this is both widows and widowers. We run so low sometimes, and especially if you had a partner that knew you well enough on how to subconsciously and consciously fill you up, whether it was the smack on the butt or the kiss on the cheek or the go play the video games, that feedback that we used to get from our person is gone. And so we don't give it to ourselves because we don't know how, right? We don't know how to pour back in. So what an amazing gift she gave you during those lean hard times to be like, and, you know, great, good for her for recognizing bonding with the boys too and all that. So that's awesome, man.
And the biggest one though, especially like how you're saying, cause my wife was sick. So this is literally like my schedule, man. I'm going to start from night to the day because it makes more sense. So of course she'll go to bed. She'll stay up late because, you know, she should take care of whatever she had to do, take showers late. And usually go to bed about maybe midnight, 1 o'clock if we're lucky. Right. You know how that is. And then from there is her being diabetic, even though she had a monitor and I had it connected to my phone. Like I said, her diabetes, just whatever she did, didn't matter. So every hour to 2 hours, not even 2 hours, I would always wake up, check on her. So that was my night, every hour or so, checking on her, waking up, making sure she's okay, she's still breathing. You don't know how many nights I had to call paramedics and blood sugars. And like, we got to know them on, you know, first name basis, came to the funeral. You know, they even showed up for Christmas one time with the truck and brought us all these gifts. They're like, we know you don't need stuff. We know you guys are good, but we just wanted you guys to smile. You know? Yeah. So, and then in the morning, of course, wake up, take all the kids to school. You know, you got the grade school, the middle school, the high school, do all that, come home, make my wife breakfast because she was sleeping, you know, so I would make breakfast for her. And then she'll wake up, we'll watch some, you know, TV while we're getting dressed, whatever, doctor's appointments, dialysis, whatever it had to do. Then by that time, kids are coming home. But then this is where she was really great with me, because sometimes I was just burnt out, and I'll tell you why the rest of the day. You know, between 1 and 3, that I was like done. And she, and 3 o'clock is when the kids came home from school. So she's like, you know what, go take a nap, because you're no good to me and us if you're not rested.
We talk about this as well. Like, this is one of the things we talk about in the solo dad world, where it's like, it's really hard. It's hard in general for us to ask for help. Number one, number two, and I can only speak for guys. I'm sure it's difficult for women as well, but we really struggle to ask for help because it's some reflection of like, I can't do it if I have to ask for help. But then the other thing is like, what a disservice we do to the people we care about the most, which is completely counterintuitive, right? Like, we're handling all this stuff because we want to show them we care for them. But just think about it, the reverse is true. We handle all this stuff to the point where we burn out, and then we're no good as a father. We're no good as a spouse. We're no good as a friend, because we're just tanked. And so what a great gift to be like, go take a nap, because you know what? You're going to be completely worthless to us if you're totally tapped. Right.
Yeah. Especially even though you've taken on so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially the kids are coming home. She's like, I need you. You know what I mean? So, like I said, and as a guy, I would feel bad. And I'm sure you understand this because your wife was sick. It's like, you're the one sick and I'm taking a nap. What's everybody going to think?
Right. Right. Well, but the thing is I think that if they're aware enough to realize that, yeah, but when the moment comes for the big thing, I don't want to call it a battle or whatever.
Yeah.
But when it becomes heavy, I'm going to need you to be able to lift. And if you're exactly. tapped, you're not going to be able to.
Yeah.
Right.
So I get all that. And so from there, the rest of the day is kids come home, pick them up, whatever, you know, take some to work. So then this is where I become an Uber driver as they get older, start taking them to wherever they need to go here, there, you know. Then of course you're trying to, you know, work from home because you got to still make money, so you have a home-based business. You still gotta, you know, do your meetings, this or that around your schedule, and then later after that, then you gotta go pick them up all from work, and they're all working different hours. One's here, one's there, and the next thing you know, you're getting home. It's 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, and then it's like, oh, where'd the day go? And then
right.
and then you wife's ready to go to bed, and then you do it all over again.
Yeah.
And then that's literally what the day was, man. It's just my whole world revolved around my wife because that's how sick she was, you know. Right. And it's like she couldn't be left alone. So eventually her mom started doing the home care for her, right. coming for, you know, during the day. And then and the kids, they helped out as much as possible, you know, when I wasn't there. But literally I was with her 24/7. Cause I even had, this is another thing, I had to walk away from my career, you know, because she was so sick.
Right.
You know, and that was hard because that income was gone.
Right.
And I had a great career, but it was just gone. And then next thing you know, it's like, okay, now we're budgeting more, doing this. But the one thing that I remember my pastor telling me one time is like, don't worry, God's going to take care of everything. The worry is to disrespect God. That means you don't trust him. So once I heard that, it's like, you know what, I'm not going to worry about none. He's always going to put food on the table. He's always going to have things taken care of. You know what? Let me just do what I got to do. If I do what I have to do with the right intentions, the pure heart, you know, I have nothing to worry about. And that's how come even moving down here to Texas, things are great because, you know, for that reason. But like I said, you know, leaving her and like when someone's sick, man, and like, I didn't get paid for taking care of my wife. In Illinois, they you know, you don't get paid for helping taking care of your wife, you know?
Right.
You know, fitness and
there's
health.
No right, there's no caregiver stuff. Right, right.
Yeah.
Which is a whole nother messed up situation.
Exactly.
So it sounds like, geez, and how long did that kind of routine go on for?
7 years, man. 7 years.
Jesus.
And then even now, I don't really sleep because they tell me it's just in my brain, my head now, waking up every hour, 2 hours. And then you just right, add like all the other wills. Yeah. And then you add all the other stuff that we go through.
Right.
So like my daughter gets upset with me because she's like, Dad, you don't sleep. Dad, take a nap. She sounds just like my wife now.
Well, she is half your wife. So, yeah. So what was how did your wife die, pass away? I don't like pass away. It feels weird, but so.
Yeah, yeah. The last day, this is what happened. I'm going to start to the night because it really leads back to the night. I was doing her dialysis at home. It was kind of late, 10 o'clock. We were actually watching the Simpsons movie with my daughter, and my daughter was getting her facial makeup and all this stuff. And remember that day, I'll never forget, of course. And then just like any other day, doing her dialysis, everything went well, everything went great. Took her off the machine, bandaged her up like normal. Went downstairs to go get something to drink. Next thing you know, I hear her calling my name, Mark. I come running upstairs and she's just bleeding, you know, through the bandages and everything, right? So it's just a lot, more than normal. It's like just coming out. And she's on blood thinners too. So you remember, it's a little bit different because, you know, dialysis. So she puts her arm up and we're taping it. And she's like, kind of like yelling at me, but not yelling at me. You know how that is. Like, oh, what's going on? Can you stop? And we're kind of like, I'm like, shut up, please. Like, you're freaking me out. Like, can you just shut up? Let me, I'll take care of this. And, you know, not, we're just going at it. Not like going at it, but it's just one of those moments where you just like, just hush. And so she's just laughing and we're doing it. And then eventually I end up stopping it, right? Just put some more bandage, get a little tighter. She has her arm up, stops bleeding, right? Eventually everything's cool. And I'm like, you want to call the doctor? Just let them know everything, you know, what happened. They're like, no, it should be okay. I think it's just the blood thinner, you know, we're like, okay, cool. Wake up in the morning. She has a lot of energy. She looks great, smiling. And she needed the car because I was actually going to a training for something else. And it's like, I really need the car. You mind if I drop you off? And mind you, my wife don't drive because her health reasons. I'm always driving. Right. I'm always doing everything or someone else. But I'm like, oh, well, I'm going to be gone for like 3 days. I don't want to leave her without the car for 3 days. So I'm like, all right, you can take the car. Just drop me off. She goes and drops me off. And then now you remember those little moments, you know, like just holding her hand in the car and just, it was silence, you know, cause it was real early in the morning. And then I get out the car, I give her a hug, give her a kiss. I go in the building and then I just hear a beep, beep, beep. And it's weird because it's kind of like, God gave me that last chance that I really didn't realize or of course didn't recognize that's going to be the last time. So what happened is I forgot my phone in the car. So I went back to get my phone. And of course, she's gives me the phone, gives me one last kiss and says, I'll let you know when I get home. So that's cool. I go inside, everything. She goes home. She takes the kids all to school, drops them off. And the crazy thing is talking to the kids now. It's like she knew, but she didn't know because the things that she said.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But like my son talked about in one of his posts that she said, don't forget, I love you.
Oh, man.
You'll always be my son.
Oh. And this is like as she's driving him to school and stuff after she's dropped you off?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
that's amazing.
So imagine that's his last conversation. He goes to school and then of course then she goes and drops off baby Jay at school and she kind of tells him the same thing. I love you. I'll see you later. Baby Jay gets out the car and runs into the school and you know, just like normal at the stop sign. And after she gets into school, my wife dies right there, but and listen.
Say that again, right there.
Right there at the stop sign. Wow. Where she dropped her off for whole school.
This is where I think like our lack of understanding of the human spirit. And when I say spirit, like the thing that's inside of us really is it there are so many, like that is so powerful, Mark. And thank you for sharing. It is like ours was more for me. It's interesting because I think you hit the nail on the head, which was, You can't ask, right? Because she's not here. Somehow, some way, if people are in tune with it, they know.
Yeah.
Right. And so like she was nearly bleeding out 12 hours before, right? Yep. Doing their dialysis. And then she wakes up, she has all this last bit of energy to do all this stuff that probably she normally couldn't do, I assume, right? Yep. She'd been too tired. And so she's able to do this one last thing, right? And kind of, it sounds so bad sometimes, but like, what a gift to give each one of you to be able to do that little act of service, right?
Yeah.
The fact that you left your phone and you went back for one more I love you and one more goodbye, right? It could have been just a normal drop off and off you go. Like all of that it's just a powerful thing about how the human spirit, I think, sometimes has a way of giving exactly what we need in those moments, and being able to provide something to those that we love the most, as this journey comes to an end, man. That is super powerful.
Just check this out, brother. Her last message to me, which you could even translate it to something different, some people say, is like, she texted me, her last thing was, "Babe, I'm home."
No way.
Yeah. And then of course my last message to her was, "I love you, babe."
Wow.
So she texted me, "I'm home." An hour later, she was gone. So some people say, "Mark, oh man, you could look at that even in a bigger way."
Yeah.
You know, she's saying, "I'm home. I'm going to heaven."
Yeah. You know, absolutely.
I'm going to be with our daughter now. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So it's you know, I still got it saved here in my phone. And
of course, there's actually, you just reminded me, I'll put it in the show notes. There's actually a service where you can get your text messages put on PDF, because I'm always terrified I'm going to somehow delete them. And it's not cheap, but you can get them so you can print them out and they become like almost like a book. Yeah. But totally sidebar. Sorry. How, so, and technically, and correct me if I'm wrong, it was a brain aneurysm, right? Due to all the complications.
No, stuff. Actually, it was an aneurysm from her heart to her kidney.
Oh, heart to the kidney. Whoa.
Yeah. And like I said, that the chance of any living that is 0.0001. There's no chance. And the only good comfort and thing I get out of it is that it was quick, painless, and she didn't know.
Yeah. 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 Oh,
that's the only thing that really gives me comfort, because she never wanted to be on the bed, on the machine, you know, suffering, and she didn't want to put us through that. And the crazy thing is, everybody says, I was with my wife for 7 straight years, like every day.
And that's like the moment that, yeah, the one time you weren't, right? Yeah.
Yeah, the one time I'm not there.
You know, and, though, like, there, yeah, I mean, the way I'm hearing it is, your wife was a mom and a wife one last time.
Yeah.
Right. And gave that gift back to everyone she loved one last time before she died.
Want to hear another crazy story?
Yeah. That's what this podcast is all about, man.
All right. Check this out. So I have two sons. They're in the military, right? So one's in the field, he's training, just turned 22 now. Of course, that's hard, because you gotta call them, and you gotta call the Red Cross and let them know, because and then the other one was in boot camp, so they know the Red Cross comes, you know, something's up, something serious.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't know she had passed, but they thought she was in the hospital. Something really bad happened. So, of course, I called my one son, and we're talking, and he's out in the field in the middle of nowhere. And the only thing I got to tell him was, like, your mom died. And then the phone cuts off.
Whoa.
Yeah. The phone cuts off. And he had to live with that and be around his surrounding and still work and train and do everything he had to do after just hearing that. You know what I mean? And then my other son, he's at boot camp. And of course, he had to call him, tell him Red Cross. He kind of just thought she had passed. He's like, "Dad wouldn't be contacting me unless something happened like that." But what happened is, he went through his times, and that just happened to be mail day. And he happened to get a letter from her that day.
Wow.
And in that letter at the end, it says, "As long as I'm on this earth, you'll always be my son."
Oh, wow.
"And I love you." He still has that letter, of course, but it's kind of like.
Yeah, she wrote that, right? She wrote that.
And she wrote that. Week, she wrote that, like, right, 2-3 weeks earlier.
Before, right?
Yeah,
that's crazy.
And he gets that the day that she passes away, saying, "You know what? You got this in boot camp. I believe in you. I love you. I'm so proud of you. You know, keep going. I'm your biggest supporter." And then she's gone. So, you know, imagine that too. Like, he's over there where, and this is another thing where we talked about, and that's why you have this show, and you know, I appreciate it, because that's so, you know, being a man, especially in an environment like that where you're not supposed to show feelings, you're not supposed to be crying, you're not supposed to be weak. You know, I have two sons in these areas where you're supposed to be macho, you're supposed to be tough. You know what I mean? And they're going through the worst thing in their lives, and I can't do anything for them. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. What, and you know, it's it, man, what a powerful, it's just such, it's such an, it's such a powerful, and I keep coming back to like giving, like it's just such a, and it sounds so, and until you've walked through grief, like, and you have some, a little bit of distance, like you've got about 2 years, you said, right?
Yeah, there's, just past 2 years.
There's this weird perspective you get where you go like, it, things either kind of make some sense, or you go like, well, that, what, you know, gift always sounds so bad, but like, what a gift, because usually gifts mean happy, right? But like, the fact that she wrote that letter to your son and even sent it, right, to let him know whether she lived another 6 months or it went, showed up on the day like it did, to just give him that gift of like, you know that I love you, know that I'm proud of you, know that all of that, where she could have not written that letter ever, right? And so, and I think, you know, you're right. As the father, you know, you got two guys who are away from home, who have probably some of the worst news they could ever get delivered to them, and having to like, you know, hide some of the emotions because it's really hard to be in that environment and be emotional, because those two things don't usually coincide together very well.
Yep.
And, but I think you probably, whether you knew it or not, because of your wife's long journey with being sick, you probably prepared them in ways you didn't know to handle it. Not necessarily in that environment per se, but you probably taught them, you know, this is a thing that may be happening to us.
Yeah. It's kind of like with my daughter, and I'll touch on both my sons and my daughter. With my daughter, all she's known is mom's been sick ever since she was in the womb. And all she ever knew is this is normal. She knew one day that this was going to happen. And it happened. You never know when the last time is going to be the last time or the last day. And so they had their talks, of course. And then with my sons, you know, we had our talks, but more importantly, my wife did too. And she always told them, no matter what happens, don't ever use me as an excuse. So my one son, Joshua, that was in the field, he was able to come back. And my son, Angel, he was able to come back too. But if he came back, he was going to have to wait like 6 months or a year and do the boot camp all over again. And I told him, you can't come home. I go, you're not coming home. He's like, what? He goes, no. He goes, what would Annie say? Don't use her as an excuse.
Powerful.
He goes, what would she tell you to do? Stay and finish. So what'd he do? He stayed and finished. So imagine, you know, his mom just passed and he can't come home.
Yeah.
You know, the good thing is, though, they allowed him, though, the, like, you know, video, FaceTime, whatever, call, and at least be there when it happened. And so he was able to be there, talk and say stuff, but it wasn't the way he wanted, of course. And the beauty about it is when he graduated, we went back to go support him, of course. And so many other memories came back, because a year earlier, my other son had just graduated at the same boot camp. The first year, the whole family was together. This year, mom's missing.
Yeah.
You know, same hotel, same stuff. Because, you know, it's not a big city, so you've got to stay at the same places.
Right.
Same restaurants, same everything. Wow. And so you went from one, the whole family's here, to another, the whole family's here, but the whole family's not here.
Right.
And just the reality of it, like, wow, she's really gone.
Yeah, that's kind of that PTSD of like, you go back and you repeat something with the person missing, and it really hits home, right? Because like, there's a definitive absence. Like, and one of the things that we've talked about too before, where it's like, you've been to the grocery store without your wife before, and you've been with her before, and you've been since, right? The one thing you never did without your wife was go to a military graduation. You did after she died, right? Like, so but there's certain events that, like, well, I've always tied my shoes, so it's not a big deal if I tied my shoes after my wife died. But certain things, like, there are certain places that, like, unfortunately, like, or for, you know, on a lighter note, like, I can never finish watching the Game of Thrones because that's what my wife and I watched on the couch together. And I have no idea how that's going to end because I'm not going to watch it without her. Right. So it's those sort of things where you go play it back or you go do it again for the first time. that, like you said, there's a big, it's definitive because it's the only time you ever did it was with her. Yeah. Right. And it's so, and it's only a year later, you said too, right?
Yeah. And it was only like 3 months after she passed. So she passed January 16th. And that was like March something. Cause that's the day that COVID like was officially COVID.
Oh, wow. Like the 19th. Oh, weekend. So yeah.
So we were coming back because we were coming back and we didn't even know what was happening. We went to the grocery store. I went to the grocery store for a tomato and everybody's going crazy. And I'm like, we're like, what's going on? Cause we had no clue.
Cause you were just traveling. Yeah.
Yeah. But, but like, it was only like 2 months later after she passed, you know, experiencing that, of course. And, you know, I remember like you said, you know, me and my daughter, cause we drove back home for the holidays and then we just came back. There's a place, it's a chocolate, you know, fudge place. And it's called Uranus. And yeah, I don't know if you heard of it, but it's like
I have. Oh yeah, it's not a joke, people. We'll put a link for it. It's hilarious. Yeah, go ahead.
Great place.
Yeah.
And the thing is, outside of it, there's a the thing from the Zoltan, right?
Yeah. The Zoltan from the movie Big. Yep.
Yeah. So my wife took a picture of it when we were there the year before, and then this time we stopped. Me and my daughter, and she wanted some fudge, and she's like, "Dad, can I take a picture like mommy did?" So she went and took a picture, you know, just like her mom. And then, of course, I have them now side by side.
Of course.
It's crazy because those memories, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I can't wait to take my daughter to some places that went with just my wife and capture some images. Yeah. Like, this is a picture of like, it's very surreal to go back to some place that you only ever were with your spouse and then bring a child. It's half them, or in our case, mm-hmm. it sounds like they're probably more like 90% their mothers, like mine is. Yeah. But which is a kick to the crotch. You're like, really? Like, come on! Like, you get the look, and you're like, oh, it's right to, oh, there. Man. You are. And that's
about
the one.
Look, check this out. Yeah. I don't know if you saw, but I actually posted about it. I watched my Big Fat Greek Wedding yesterday. Right? It was.
I didn't read your post, but I did. Yeah.
Yeah. I gotta watch it just because it felt like my wife said you gotta watch it. Right? I watched it. My daughter came home. I'm like, hey, guess what I did. She goes, what? I go, I watched my Big Fat Greek Wedding. And then, like you said, the look just like their mom. It's like just that look. And she's like, really? You saw it without me? Something my wife would say. Just like if Game of Thrones, like you were saying, if yep. you would have watched it without your wife. And
it's fascinating. So back to the picture thing. It's fascinating because there's something about wanting, I'd even go further and say needing to make a connection to what was to what is. Yeah. Right. And, you know, I think it's really important, especially for the kiddos, to realize that they can stand in a place that they're for us, their mother, yeah. right? Or in other cases, fathers stood, and somehow you can't be in the same place at the same time. That's not possible, but somehow there's that connection, yeah. right? Because I think one of the other things that's important to talk about, and maybe this is a good segue into it, is like over the past 2 years, like that picture, how you and the kiddos have continued to keep a connection to your wife, right? And why it's important, because they were here. She was a very important role in your family's life for 12 years. Do I have that right? Right. I think it's yes. 12, right?
Yeah.
For 12 years. That doesn't stop. And I think that's one of the things that, like, some people, if they're not being honest with their grief, they're like, well, they died and that's it. And you're like, no, not if they are important. Right. So, exactly. And I think that's also a guy thing where we kind of go like, I'm done with that emotion. I'm like, yeah, just wait. Cause it's going to come and slap you upside the back of the head when you least expect it. Or one of the phrases we use, and I think I've stole this from someone, grief will find a way. Right. So if you deny your grief, right. And you're like, no, I'm not that sad. It's going to show up in drinking too much. It's going to show up in overcompensating someplace else, because it will find a way to be dealt with. Because in order for you to live life forward, you have to recognize it. And so that connection back, not in a sad way, like how do you and you have kids that range a very of age. So I always find this fascinating. Like, it's got to be very different for the 22-year-old than it is for your 13-year-old, right?
Yeah.
No, 12-year-old.
She's 12. Yeah, she's going to be 13.
13 soon. So, like, how do you keep those connections going, whether it's a picture or a memory or a letter? And then how does that either help you or does it hurt you? Like, I'm just curious as to, like, that grieving process, right?
Yeah. Well, I think of it like this when I think of a moment with my kids and we talk about it. You know, of course, it's sad because we'll never, ever experience that ever again, of course. But it's actually a great, happy moment we're talking about and thinking about. So that's not a bad thing. And so we love to talk about it. Of course, we joke about it. You know, you'll even hear, you know, some people with that dark humor, but she had it too. You know, it's like, I could imagine if I was that, all the jokes she'd be talking about me, you know what I mean? So, you know, we just try to be open and transparent and just, you know, like, you know, about what it is and how they're doing. You know, me and my daughter, like I said, especially because it's just me and her, we talk about everything. You know, she tells me, I will think, you know, everything that's going on with her, and I tell her everything that's going on with me. You know, no secrets, because I don't want her to get blindsided, you know, or dad, you told me this, or I thought this, and then, you know.
Right.
So I just, I don't know, man, like dealing with the kids and, you know, like I said, because some of them are now getting older. My son just got married in December. That was hard because, of course, we talked about, you know, wishing she was there, you know, how much she would have been involved. You know, and then the girl that, you know, he married, her name's Jasmine. You know, my wife really loved her too. You know, she loved my wife, you know. So just all that stuff is just, you know, just talking about her.
Yeah.
Sad. You know, of course it's sad. You
know, well, and I think, yeah, it's going to be sad, but I think one of the things that's important too, and this is why I like my kind of widow Wednesday thing is when we share our person's story, it's now encapsulated forever, whether it's on Facebook or in a letter you wrote, it'll be shared forever. And it's a powerful thing to share, like, you know, the journey you went through, all the sacrifices you and your family made, right, to stay a family, right? But other people, other situations, people break and fold, and it ends fractured and not in a holistic, you know, loving family way. And I know you have a blended family. I as well, right? I have a child from a previous. And I think that one of the things that is super important to take away, and you've said it a couple of times, is like, you are honest about it, but it's also like, you easily, and this is a healthy thing, you easily go right back to the present, right? So like, it's like, she's still with you guys, which she is, right? And still influencing you and your kids' lives, right? Which is super important, because I go back to, if you deny that, it basically is almost disrespectful to the person you loved, right?
Yeah.
They were influential in your life, and they're still gonna be, right?
Yeah. My biggest thing I tell people, like, this is my belief, you know, my thought, that our pain, our story ain't meant to keep inside. You know, I believe that's how people get depressed. That's how they get lost in that fog. And then they don't know what to do. So for me, I believe our stories is shared, and like how I'm doing now, and hopefully it helps one person out there, whoever's listening, saying, man, you know, I feel that way. You know what? I get it. You know, I could get through it too, or something, whatever it is. And to help other people, that's just my thought, is to share and just keep it going. And then hopefully that next person goes and tells their story, and then it helps another person. It's that ripple effect.
Yeah, there's a great, I'm stealing this, and I should write it down the proper way, but it's something like, a page out of your journey could be a page in someone else's survival guide, right? So like, if, right? And in one of the things that first started in it kind of kicking this whole thing off was, I remember talking to other people who were caregivers of the same cancer my wife had, and going like, hey, I am 6 months down the road from this, and it didn't end the way we thought it would. And I've walked where you've walked. I'm not exactly you, and I'm not exactly in the same, but I have some things I can share with you if you'd like to hear them. Right. And it may help you, may not, but like, you're not, and I think I talked about this in the very beginning of the podcast too, is like, you might feel extremely lonely in grief and walking this journey, but you're not alone, because there are, right. I mean, according to the podcast stats, there's over 500 guys that are walking this thing, and you've seen the response you have on Facebook. And I think that one of the things, like you said, is like, you're 2 years out. So how you're looking at it now will be different in two more years.
Yep.
Again, if there's, you know, if there's a nugget in there that someone's like, wow, he went through all that, or, you know, this is a way of expressing love to my family as we're in a hard situation where maybe we have someone who's dealing with a very complicated disease or something like that, and knowing like, hey, this probably isn't going to run as long as we thought it would. So what can we do to encapsulate some stuff, like writing letters or being present in the moment and making the sacrifices to spend time with each other, because like quitting your career and that's a choice you made. And I think that one of the things that is super important is, there's no right way to do any of this. There's some really unhealthy ways. We can all probably agree that going to the bottom of a Jack Daniels bottle probably isn't the best answer for everything all the time. So there are some unhealthy ways. I'm stealing that from one of my counselors one time, but there's no right way, right? There's just a lot of really complex ways to deal with it. Let's see. So we've covered that. One of the questions I looked at, and I probably should ask this question more often. So I'm going to kind of switch real quick. First, was there anything specific with your grief journey currently? So I know you do some praying, and I don't know how far in the scripture you go, but is there anything that you find useful looking back? We'll go 2 years now, that you found useful to help give you a foundation or strength to get through, process the grief?
Yeah, I'm going to take outside of religion praying.
Yeah, that's fine.
You know, because that's the norm for most people, you know, that just, you know, for me is honestly meeting other people like yourself. You know what I mean? Talking about my wife, hearing their story, you know, because it helps me heal as well. And then in the process, hopefully they're healing together. So that's been my biggest thing, is just sharing my story, being transparent, talking about what I'm doing with my daughter, just in general. And then, like you said, there's no right way or wrong way to grieve. There's unhealthy ways, like you said, and there's no timetable.
No,
you know, people think there's a timetable. There's no timetable. You know, some people, you know, think there is, like, oh, how soon is too soon to start dating? How soon is it? And it's like, hey, there's no timetable. You know, it's like, if you, and this is thing going forward, I believe it's, you know, unfortunate that we got to go forward, like they say, but this is our chance to be picky on what we want. You know what I mean? Honestly, you know, what we want, what we need, what we deserve. You know, it's like, if there was some, because you know what worked and what didn't work in your relationship. You know, ours wasn't perfect. It wasn't perfect, but it was our perfect, you know?
Exactly.
But then I also know where I failed her, or I could have been more. You know, I could have been a better father, husband, whatever it is. And now it's like, okay, now I know I could do this. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Also, my wife wasn't perfect either, but you know what? I didn't like that about my wife either. And some people have a hard time even accepting that. You know what? Yeah. I really didn't like that.
Well, just because you didn't like it didn't mean you'd accept them as part of who they were because you love them.
I love them all.
Warts and all, we take them right.
I loved it all, but it's kind of like, you know what? You know, if that makes sense.
And remember, I can't remember if we were recording yet, but remember I was saying, like, you know, there's version 1.0, which is before we met our person. There's version 2.0 with our person. And version 3.0 is this new version of you that had success in a relationship. You had a good relationship with your wife. You know what it feels like, what it looks like. But at the same time, you're different now, right?
Oh,
because of the loss, because of the, and not even, even if you hadn't had the loss, because of the experience with your wife, right? So what I find interesting is, like you're saying, is picky or selective, or using the new parameters because of the new you to go find happiness. And one of the things you said it, and I think it's, again, I'd repeat it, which is, I think we deserve to be happy again. And what we fail, I think, in our grief to realize is we were happy once before. So why can't we be happy again? The whole idea of, like, the same level of happy, if you believe in soulmate and that was your person and whatever, fine. Maybe that's a 10 of happiness, but why couldn't you be a 9? Why do we have to be sad all the time? Right? Like, we deserve that again. And we would probably say, unless our person was severely narcissistic and not very nice, they would say, please go be happy again.
Yeah. Right. And the beauty about that is, I talk about it with some people, is the next person, if I choose to, that's another thing, if I choose to and I want it, you know what I mean, on my time, or not my time, but God's time, I guess, they'll get the you know, and people feel bad about this because they're like, how can the next person get a better version of me than my husband or wife did? And it's like, you know what? But it's because of your husband or wife is why they're getting a better version of
me. Right. We are who we are because of who they were in our lives and because they died. Both. Like, exactly. If my wife was still alive, it wouldn't be the same person. We wouldn't be having this conversation. How bizarre is that, right? That's one of the things I told someone the other day. I was like, I wouldn't even have a podcast if my wife was alive. It'd be, I don't
I'll
even,
be in
I,
Chicago with 10 inches of snow right now.
Right. You'd be, I'd be suffering with me, jerk. So I think that sharing is good. I think being open about it. I think those are all really important. And this one's a little close to home. If you, and I think I'm saying this because I think I want to sit and think about it for myself. If you could hear something from your wife right now, what would you want to hear from her?
Let's see. I was thinking about this. honestly, just to say, you know what? Don't worry. Everything's going to be okay. You know, like, you already got this far, you know, we'll be together one day. Just don't get scared. You know, I guess to keep it simple, just simple, you know.
Have you seen the phrase in the Wooda groups where, and sometimes it hits wrong with me because I'm not in the headspace to receive it, but it's really good, which is, I don't know who needs to hear this today, but you have survived 100% of your worst days.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Too. Right. And some days I don't need to hear, I'm like, whatever, it's stupid. And then other days I'm like, that's a really good point. Like, you know, we don't need to go into it, but we both had exes and we both had to do the co-parenting thing. And sometimes that can be really rough and really difficult. And I look back at some of my worst days of going through trying to figure that out as a co-parenting dad and all that goes with it. And I go like, but I'm still here. Like, as bad as that got, as bad as things have gotten,
you know,
I just don't want to hear it, like, because I'm not in that headspace. But I think that's kind of like what you were saying, a message your wife would deliver would be like, it'll be okay, because guess you just went through hell. Just went through hell and you're here. Passing your message on, being a good dad, trying to be better for yourself, trying to be better for a community of people you don't really know yet, but you're meeting. Like, that's amazing, right?
You know what? It's exactly true, man. Because I talk to people, family, friends, whoever, and in the end, I tell them, I go, you know what? I have a great life. And they look at me like, what do you mean? You lost your daughter, you lost your wife, and you know,
dad,
you
moved across the
country.
Right.
Yeah, you moved across the country for something, and you know, things, the plans are different. It's like, yeah, but I still have a great life.
Yeah,
it's like, y'all don't get it. Like, you know, I've been through like so much, and just to wake up with my daughter and just have fun and not even think about it. Like, I tell her sometimes, like, you know, we do whatever we want. You know, we're not rich. We don't got all this money or everything, but we have time freedom, right?
Right.
And I tell people, and I tell her all the time, time is irrelevant. If I don't care about time, I go, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm just living and trying to live my purpose, like I said, to help our community now. And because I think we need a lot of help out there. And there's not a lot of things out there to help us. And I think that's important, just to tell our stories and get them out there.
Yeah. Is there a thing that you do that helped you early on to process grief? And I'm just going to give you a quick example. I used on my iPhone or Android, whatever, those little voice memos. I just randomly record, babe, I miss this thing about you, or babe. And now I'm like three and a half years out. I've gone back and listened. Some I'm crying. I can hear myself crying. I'm like, I hadn't forgotten the thing. I just didn't remember the thing. Right. Like, so I'm listening to these voice memos. One has to do with, like, we used to tease each other about a toothbrush. I won't go into it. But I found it really helpful because now it's capturing that raw moment. And now 3 years later, I'm like, oh yeah, that was such a trigger for me in the first year or the first 18 months. Did you write? Did you find?
In my iPhone, I have like my notes I wrote down, you know, I write down from things. And do the voice memo things. There's things where, you know, I would draw, you know what I mean? Write in a book or something.
Yep.
I know you're
writing now about kind of like you're trying to put together like your guys' love story, right? If I can overspeak.
No, honestly, what I'm writing about is a love story, but it's not about her. I'm going to write a book about her, you know, eventually.
Yeah.
And then one about one with my daughter, you know, it's going to be like grieving with my best friend. You know what I mean?
Nice. Okay.
That's literally what I'm probably going to call it, because it's just me and her and talk about our daily stuff. But the one I'm writing about now is about, about a life experience that happened to me recently, and you know, so it's a love story, but the main thing is about being a widower dad, you know, being a solo dad, you know, taking risk on love, but most importantly is not losing faith with whatever happens in my life.
Do you find as you write it, is it helping you heal?
Oh yeah, because one, it reminds me of my wife, because she's in there, and I'm thinking about, like, man, you know, like, because of her, I'm this way, you know, because of her, you know, I would talk to her, pray to God, and talk to her, you know, send me someone, you know what, let me have some fun, is this okay, you know what I mean, you know, just let us smile again, you know?
Yeah.
So in the book covers some of that stuff, and it's just, you know, it's a work in progress. I'm about halfway through, and hopefully I'll be done by goes by the end of the month, you know, and then see where it goes from there. And hopefully it helps some other people out there.
That's fantastic. Well, and, you know, I think one of the other things too, and let's go back to the social media stuff.
Yeah.
How do you find, not that was bad. I don't want to say that. I'll edit that out and give you a pause here. When you find the quotes that you share, A, is it from a place of where you're feeling at that moment? Or is it a place of like, I feel like this is a message I need to share with folks? Like, kind of, because some of them are so spot on when you share them inside of our groups. And I should probably link some of these groups on Facebook in the show notes. Like, how's that? Because I also like part of doing the podcast is healing for me. It very much is, you know, and bearing witness to you and other guys sharing their love stories can be really, really hard. That's part of the reason I took a break.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's an honor, and it fills me up to go like, man, there's dudes out there that are really doing it, that are really doing a good job, and I can share their story through this medium. And that's amazing. When you find those things, like I'm trying to figure out, like, how are you aiming those, or like how, yeah, because they're really powerful, man. And you get a lot of great responses. So I'm just kind of curious.
When I find them, one, it reminds me of a moment with my wife, you know, or what I was going through, you know. Just, I post some stuff, and there's some people think I'm dating sometimes. And it's like, no, I'm thinking about my wife a lot of, you know, like 98% of the time. And, but then there's the other posts that really pertain, you know, to like, you know, our groups and stuff. And it's like, I remember that moment, you know, and what I want to do is, you know, just connect with people. Cause sometimes I've heard where people want to say stuff, but they're scared to, cause they don't want to be judged. They don't know how to say it, you know what I mean? Or type it, cause they don't feel like what they say would be like. And it's like, so when I post it and I talk about it, it's like, one, it's about me, my personal experience, number one. And then number two, hopefully that it connects with someone out there that will get them to open up and just say, you know what? I remember that. Like, I posted about, do you remember when I remember when I first moved in with my wife? And then all of a sudden everybody started just ding, 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 ding.
Yeah. You know? Well, and I think that's a really good way to put it, Mark, because I think what you're finding is a lot of what you post resonates with folks, where they, like you said, they can't find the right way to start, or when it speaks to them and it opens them up and they're like, oh, I've, you know, it in a good way, it triggers them into a memory of that they want to share, but they didn't feel a way to start it or whatever. So I want to thank you for doing that, because there's been a lot of really positive stuff coming from it, man. And so I appreciate it. As we kind of tie up our time, is there anything else that you want to share with people who are listening, or is there anything else that you want to make sure you get across before we kind of wrap up?
Real quick, you know, just to let everybody know, like, we're all in this journey together. You know, there's, you know, a lot of people feel alone. You know, say my friends or families don't realize, or they don't relate. My biggest thing I've told them is like, you got to change your circle. You got to find people that can relate to you. You know what I mean? I made so many more friends that are widows and widowers that I added on my social media, because we can relate, we can talk. You know, my families and friends, I love them to death. I care about them, but you know what? I'm living a different life than they are. You know, I'm not going out there partying. I'm not there out there vacationing, family vacations like before. You know, it's not the same. So my thing is, find other people that are just like you, you know. You know, it could be one or two people. That way, when something happens, you can relate. Like for me, I tell them all the time, my door is always open. I don't really sleep. You know how that goes sometimes. So message me anytime. And then, you know, I try to just be friends. And it's all about community, because they think they're alone. But we have a huge community out there together that love and support each other. And I'm not talking about dating or hooking up, because some people, you know, take it the wrong way. And you know, and it's like, no, it's a community. You just want to help, support, get us through these moments, because that's what they are. They're moments, and help get through those moments. And then hopefully they do the same thing, because this is the sad truth. Everybody, you know, one day if they're married and they love like us, will be a widow.
So one of them will be, right. One of the two. Exactly. Yeah.
My son just got married. And this is the thing. This is another real quick story. My son got married, right? at the same church where we had my wife's wake and funeral, where he said his I do's is where my wife casket laid. And it was a great, beautiful moment. But at the same time, I was thinking, man, one of them one day will be in a group like this, and it hurts.
It does. Yeah. It's an interesting, yeah, it's a community you don't want to be a part of, but you will be whether you like it or not one day. It's interesting. One of the things I think I use in the podcast is I'll say tribe of allies, because I was trying to figure out how to describe like the guys, right? Because the group I have is a guy group. And it's like, it's not for everybody. Everyone handles it a little differently, right? But like, there are guys who handle it a similar enough way. Maybe you and I are like this, but like you kind of become brothers. And I have women who are widowers or widows. That all works anyway. Yeah. Whatever. I call them my sister warriors, because they are like, they're like a sister to me. But we're both going through this thing. They're carrying a heavy load wherever they are in the grief journey. It's more out of like mad respect and like being able to drop a, man, don't you hate it when, or isn't it hilarious when, and they get it, whether it's dark humor or funny or whatever, because if you share that with, and I'm really blessed. I have an amazing group of like lifelong guy friends. And one of them called me on my, I guess it's an explicit, so I don't really care. Called me on my bullshit one time where I was like, you just don't get it. And he goes, listen, I may not get it, but I can listen. And I was like, you know, fair point. We've been friends for over 30 years. You can definitely listen to me grouse about how it's unfair that my spouse is dead or whatever. And so I do open up to them a little more than I used to, because I felt like, oh, I'm just pissing him on all the time. But back to what you said is, I think that the community is a big thing. And I would encourage people, and Mark, you probably can chime in as well. If you haven't found somebody in a community yet, keep looking, because they're out there. Maybe they're not as active on social media. Maybe there's another avenue you can find them.
Well, but one of my biggest thing I tell people, especially because they're on the group, they say, I don't know anybody to this. And I'm like, you're on a group of grieving people. There's plenty of people there. You just not talking or reaching out, you know, not to be mean. It's kind of, it's like, that's why we're on there, you know, because you need that support. You're looking for that support.
And it should be, and I have find, and I don't, maybe you can piggyback on this too. I find, for the most part, I'm trying to go through all the groups I'm kind of active in, almost all of them are 98% of the time a safe space. So you won't get the trolls, right? If you're going to rail against whatever the thing is, it doesn't matter. There's not going to be people who are going to call you out for being stupid. You will probably just get a bunch of people supporting you, right?
Yeah,
even if there's people or even if there's people that do think you're being completely crazy, they're not going to say anything, because they understand grief is different. And this is a safe space. It's not your personal page. It's not a political statement, right? So I find that the widowhood groups are really good at, like, you know what? Yeah. If you've got the hots for your neighbor's pool guy, then yeah, it's a thing, lady, and it's cool. And we all might be like, that's weird, but it's totally a safe space, right? Cause you can't put that on your personal page, because we'd be like, it's a little soon or whatever. That's a bad joke, but yeah.
Well, check this out. I had a really good friend reach out to me, you know, this morning, last night, you know, we talked real quick, and it's a female, but not, you know, just community,
just
right?
Friends. Yep.
And today's her husband's birthday. And she's like, what do I post? What can I say? What should I say? You know, I feel weird or whatever, this or that. It's like, post whatever you want. But I go, if you don't feel safe on your regular page, do it on the group.
There you go.
You know, start there.
Yep.
You know, and just go from whatever you're feeling and just go through the process, you know what I mean? And because sometimes, you know, because I even hear from other people, you know, like if they're dating someone or just barely talking to someone, I don't want to disrespect them. It's like, no, that's not disrespecting them. It's, nope. You know, it's like,
you're in a total safe space. Yeah. And I look forward to, in the near future, I think it's time for me to have like, and it's already in the works, but like a dating roundtable conversation, because it's so fascinating to me to hear people's take on when or not, or what widows should or should not do with dating. It blows my mind. Like, anyway, that's a whole nother thing. So reach out to people, be active in the community. Is there anything else that you would want to impart on people before we call it?
Yeah, I know everybody's not all spiritual and stuff like that, but my biggest take for me is, you know, just talk to whoever you believe in, God, whoever, like a simple conversation like we had today. You don't have to be all whatever it is that people think, you know what I mean? And just talk, just speak it. And whatever you want in your life, like I said, we have the opportunity to make that happen. It's going to be hard. It's not going to be easy. gonna go through ups and downs, but like you said, you have a whole community here to help each other and support each other and get through it, you know.
I think that's awesome. Mark, I wanna thank you again for taking time out of your day. Hopefully the kiddo's at school and you're not snowed in, and you and I will be in touch more. So thank you, man. I really appreciate your time, man. Thank you so much.
I appreciate you, man.